Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, Snoop Dogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly, vigorous, relentless, and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. And I know I just said weekly, and many of my listeners are laughing because it certainly hasn't been weekly lately. What are we on? I think we're on a two-week, is it a two-week or a three-week hiatus? It's one or the other. It's either 2 or 3 weeks we've been on hiatus here. So, it's been busy. Excuse me. Busy to say the least. But we're back at it and ready to do it here tonight on Well Armed Radio. Good to see some familiar faces here in the chat. We got Lon logged in tonight. And Lon, good to have you with us. And a little late start for the show here tonight. I was out playing golf. So for that reason, got a late start. And it's summer, you know. My listenership is the lowest during the summer, and so that's one of the reasons I get a little bit fast and loose with the start time. I'm out enjoying the few short months of good weather we have here in Wisconsin, and I presume many other people are as well. And so, but good to have you in, Lon, for the chat, and anybody catching the podcast, great to have you with us as well. We are broadcasting live from the Very Well Armed Studio in Niobrara, Wisconsin. It's my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are indeed your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark, president of Wisconsin Carry, host of Well Armed Radio. And encourage you to be part of the show with commenting in the chat or your calls. Phone number for the show, 563-999-3787, 563-999-3787. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And as I mentioned, we've been off for a couple of weeks. So last time we talked, I mentioned to you guys, the listeners, that I was going to be taking my boat across Lake Michigan for the first time the following weekend. And so for that reason, I didn't know if I'd be back in time to do a show. So that was, 2 weeks ago. That was the week before 4th of July. So that was, it doesn't matter what the dates were, but Lon says camping next week or the trip to Missouri. Excellent. Excellent. Camping's not, I love camping. In a hotel room with air conditioning and a shower in the morning. But we were scheduled to take the boat across and I'm getting a rude awakening, maybe perhaps is a way to describe it, into the world of yachting with my experiences of the last few weeks. When we bought the yacht that we have now, we had anticipated, you go from a trailer boat where you can take anywhere you want to go to a yacht and limited to Lake Michigan and places that we can access by Lake Michigan. And I can have it hauled other places. Like I could have the boat put on to, Lon says travel trailer with AC and a shower. You know, it's funny, Lon, because I was just before the show looking at trailers. I was thinking about getting one. Now that I don't have a trailer boat, which was anytime I would go someplace, I was probably taking my boat. So I thought about now I could get a travel trailer. And actually, I started looking at really small ones. I started looking at like the Timberleaf, little two-person sleeper trailer, just something that we could use for just a real short weekend type thing. But the lead time for a tip, this is the case with so much stuff with COVID now, boats, RVs, the lead time to order a Timberleaf trailer is like 17 to 18 months. So that means you order it now. 12 months would be July of 2022. Add another 5 months to that. So you're basically December of 2022, almost essentially almost 2023 before you take delivery of the trailer. So that's what I was looking at today. During the summer, we're yachting. We've got the yacht. And like I said, I can take that to other lakes if I have it hauled there and leave it there. I could have it hauled to Winnebago and stuff like that, but I think I'd be too limited there. It's too big of a boat for those to really enjoy. So we're pretty much stuck to Lake Michigan. And when we decided to go yachting or to switch to the yachting lifestyle from trailer boats, we knew that we'd be giving up inland boating, which turned out to work out okay because last year with COVID and boat dealerships just being sold out of boats and all kinds of people getting into boating because it was something you could do socially distant and it couldn't be shut down. Dealers get sold out of boats, lots of new people getting into boating. Inland boat launches were just packed last year. It would have been insane. I mean, I would have done my best to find a way. I kind of know all the tricks and hacks to get about out and about in terms of inland boating. So part of me thought, well, if we'd have been stuck inland boating, we'd have been, because we don't get out there till 1 o'clock on a Saturday. Well, that's prime time. We'd have had to wait hours just to get in the lake every day. But I think, again, I know some tricks. I think I would have been able to, I think I know how I would have been able to get the boat launched every day. Now coming off would have been another issue because that makes me think that, the boat launch is busy during the day with people going out and being full and stuff. But again, I know places where I could have launched and avoided that. But getting off the lake when everybody's trying to get off at the same time, that's the one that I think would have been another kicker for me last year. So I think I probably saved myself a lot of headaches by switching to a yacht that I keep down at a marina. I still don't keep in the water, so I still get put in every time. But, there's the way my boat situation is, they pull me out of the warehouse with a big, huge travel lift, roll me over the well Saturday morning. When I come down, I lower it down in, drive off, come back, drive back in the well, pull it back out of the water. So it works out well for me. But in sacrificing not being able to go inland, our trade-off was that we'd be able to go to Door County with the yacht, to cross to Michigan with the yacht, stuff like that. And so last year we tried to make our first trip up to Port Washington. That got snuffed out from high waves. We had to turn around and come back. We did make it to Port Washington this year over Memorial Day weekend. The ride up was super rough. Something I really wouldn't want to duplicate. I said it at the time. I said, I never want to be out in that rough stuff again. The ride back, we went up on Saturday. The ride back on Sunday was very, very, very nice. Then we planned this trip to Saugatuck. kind of had the countdown going about a month out, you know, 20 days of Saga, 28 days of Saga Talk, 20 days of Saga Talk. And then the week before, by like Monday, the forecast for the weekend was a lot of rain. So it started looking like we might not make it early in that week, you know, so it wasn't a huge shock when the weekend came and we couldn't go. We had also then planned for the following week to take the yacht up to to Door County for 4th of July weekend. And that's something Door County is a place we've vacationed as a family for many, many years. Now the kids are getting older and they kind of have their own thing to do for the most part. But we were still planning on going up there, Kim and I, and you know, hanging out in Nicolet Bay, golfing at Lakeshore State Park, Peninsula State Park, one of our favorite places to golf. It's just a lot of great memories up there in Door County. So we're getting ready to go. So we didn't get to go to Saugatuck, didn't get to Cross Lake Michigan. Forecast was bad. What we ended up doing is just taking a day trip up to Manitowoc, because what we're supposed to do the next weekend, 4th of July weekend, is go up to Manitowoc on Thursday on the yacht, Lake Milwaukee to Manitowoc via Lake Michigan, spend the night Thursday night in Manitowoc, and then Manitowoc to Sturgeon Bay Friday morning, Sturgeon Bay to Fish Creek, you know, Friday midday, and then golf Peninsula State Park Friday afternoon, and then Saturday be anchored at Nicolet Bay, chilling, having a great time with several hundred of our boating friends, and then Sunday morning get up, eat, and head back. So Sunday, Monday, you know, you start seeing the long range the 7 day forecast, and the forecast was great for 4th of July weekend. Dry 4 days in a row with no rain. I thought this is amazing. The stars are lining up, or at least the weather meteorologist's forecast is lining up. This is going to be spectacular. How fantastic that we lucked out to get 4 days without rain for our first big, huge trip on the yacht. Wednesday, wake up thinking, all right, 1 day till we leave. We were supposed to leave Thursday afternoon for Manitowoc. Nice leisurely day Thursday. I was going to blow off work out in the morning. Kim was supposed to work at the hospital. She's a nurse. And then head up late afternoon, get to Manitowoc. Well, then Wednesday morning, I get up thinking, yep, one more day till we leave. Got a busy day Wednesday, just getting work stuff done. And then Thursday, I had stuff getting delivered, you know, by Amazon, by a few other things that I'd ordered, provisions and stuff that we needed, gadgets we needed for the trip. Turn on the TV in the morning. First, I watch news, Channel 6 news, local news for in the morning. And the weather meteorologist comes on and he says, well, a great weekend shaping up, although Thursday is not a day you're going to want to be on Lake Michigan. We got a nor'easter blowing in and high winds and high waves, small craft advisories on Lake. Small craft advisory is really, they don't actually assign a size, but small craft is essentially recreational craft. Anything, you know, the big freighters that are coming out of Milwaukee and, you know, the Great Lakes freight shipping, those aren't small craft. But, you know, like a 50-foot boat is still considered a small craft. And it's not fun. I mean, those small craft warnings, it's not fun to be out in those. So here I'm thinking, you know, we're all ready to go on this Door County trip for 4 days with the yacht. And then we got high waves on Lake Michigan on Thursday. Now I thought those were supposed to kick up later in the day. So my plan was to hustle, shift plans up and leave Thursday morning. So I totally screw my Wednesday hustling around. I'm driving to stores to pick up stuff that was going to get delivered on Thursday, you know, free delivery stuff that was coming in on Thursday, because now we want to leave early Thursday morning. So I'm getting all this stuff together. Did two workouts on Thursday, which was, you know, when I was younger, that was easier. And doing two-a-days now at 46 is not as easy. But we did it Thursday night or Wednesday night, blending up all my Big Green Monsters, I call them, my blended chicken/salmon/spinach/squash, a whole wheat pasta, flaxseed oil, powdered milk, and water. That's my big meals, how I get down all my protein. Blended up a bunch of those to take with on our trip. Late in the evening, I got to get out and run to the store for a couple other things. Go to jump on my motorcycle, open the garage door, start spitting rain, look at the radar, huge squall line coming in. Jump in the truck instead, take off to the store, get to the store, get out of the truck, walk around the back of the truck. Tailgate was open on the truck, and I realized I had set all kinds of provisions getting ready for the trip on the tailgate of the truck in the garage. And I have a huge four-car garage, and so the truck was angled away from me. So when you get in, you can't really see that the tailgate's open. You don't walk past it. And so now it's pouring, torrential downpour. I'm backtracking, picking up brand new, really nice cook pan that I was going to use in the yacht, picking up that off the road. Just I dumped all kinds of my provisions on the road, pouring rain. Oh, it was just, it just turned into a clusterfuck. And then got to bed very, very late, was so keyed up and amped up. I couldn't get to sleep, just got 4 hours of sleep, but I thought, you know what? No big deal. We're heading to Manitowoc much earlier than we're otherwise going to. So I've got nothing to do all day. We can get up there. We're going to plug the boat in and I'm going to take a nap. Well, we get up early, head down to the marina. As we drive over the Hone Bridge, we can see Lake Michigan, and I didn't see any waves coming over the break wall. So I'm like, all right, we're okay. There's, you know, the waves haven't kicked up yet. We're going to beat it. We're going to get out there before the waves come. Get to Skipper Bud's, load up the boat, get dropped in the water, back out, head out. We're coming down Milwaukee River, where it goes underneath the Hone Bridge, to get to the outer harbor. So we're going from the inner harbor to the outer harbor. And as we're going under the Hone Bridge, I can see that waves are now coming over the break wall. So that means you've got some at least decent sized waves out there. We head to the North Gap, go out the North Gap, and we're taking pretty significant waves. I mean, I start going slow, and we were ending up kind of coming over one wave and slapping into the next one. I thought, you know, even if we have to go slow, if we can only go 10 miles an hour and it takes us 7 hours to get up to Manitowoc because it's 70 miles, no big deal. We got all day. We got 7 hours to spare. But at that slow speed, we're taking just tons of spray into the boat because we're slapping waves and the wind's blowing it. I tried to speed up a little bit to kind of bring the bow up, and we weren't quite on plane, and then we hit some waves that just, it sounded so bad that we, you know, there was no way we were going to make it 70 miles and that kind of, those kind of waves. So turn around, just totally gutted, you know, all the effort that we went through and the stress of trying to get ready to go. And then just the disappointment of not being able to go to Door County, which is, again, one of the reasons when we sacrificed the trailer boat and the ability to go inland wherever we wanted. I mean, the trade-off was, but now we can go to all these other places that we never could before with the yacht, with the boat. So not being able to do that was just a pretty big, I don't know, it was a pretty big demoralizing experience for me. Started to question, hey, you know, are we ever going to get this lucky where we're going to have 4 days without rain and then still have calm enough seas to get up there? It just, I don't know. I was pretty bummed out. And so headed back to the marina, you know, super, super disappointed, trying to figure out if this, you know, that I spent all this money on a yacht and I'm not going to be able to really use it like I want to. Pull the boat back out of the water, head back to, you know, New Berlin, and decide I want to adapt and overcome. I want to find a way to still make something of this 4th of July weekend rather than, because just staying home would feel like, staying home would just feel like such a defeat when we had this big plan to go to Door County with the yacht. Looked at a map, said, oh, Sheboygan's not too far. We've never been to Sheboygan, called Sheboygan. They had an open slip. We decide that later on Friday, we're going to head up to Sheboygan. So we'll go to Sheboygan for the weekend. They got a beautiful marina up in Sheboygan. We do that, make that plan. Super excited. The waves, the seas were supposed to calm down by the time we left for Sheboygan on Friday evening. We left the marina probably about 4:30. it was still pretty damn rough. But we got to Sheboygan. It was a rough ride. Here's the thing. You could get going 20, 30 miles an hour. Up on plane, my boat is relatively fuel efficient. I mean, when I say relatively, you know, it's nothing like a car. I mean, it's, put it this way, 50 miles to go to Sheboygan and back, that was $720. I went through $725 worth of gas for the weekend. Although the way back, the seas were calm. We were doing 40, 42 the whole way. I can monitor my fuel flows and find my most efficient cruise speed. But the way up there, we'd be going 20, you get up to 30, then you got these annoying little 2-foot waves, but then every, you know, 60 to 90 seconds, maybe a little bit less, you get these 4 or 5 foot rollers coming through, and you got to back off the throttle on those, or it's just pounding on the boat, and more pounding than I want the boat to take. So you see them coming. And here's the thing, super stressful, because, you know, you're going on a long drive on the interstate. You got to keep your eyes out for cars, but you don't have to watch every little bump in the road. When you're yachting and on rough water, you got to pay such close attention. You got to watch every set of waves coming in to see if there's a big set of rogue waves that are going to, you know, smash into you. And it's just, so it was a rough ride up to Sheboygan. I said to my fiance, I said, damn it, this is, when we were driving up to Port Washington in this, in heavy seas, I told myself never again. And now here we are going up to Sheboygan, double that distance in heavy seas. But we made it to Sheboygan. It was a nerve-wracking couple, you know, days to all the changes of plans and adapting and rough seas, getting up Sheboygan. Got into Sheboygan, got docked, really helpful people at the dock, beautiful marina facilities up there in Sheboygan. Got checked in, told my fiance, you know, I'm so amped up from the last 2 days, I just can't feel like I'm relaxed. I should be totally relaxed and chill right now, and yet I'm just... And she's like, well, you know, it's almost bourbon time. Sure enough, so I mean, we went and sat down, had a drink, and just started easing. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to go downstairs and, you know, turn the air conditioning on in the cabin so that it's nice and cool when we get down there for bed. It's about 11 o'clock. Come back up, you know, eat a turkey burger for my before bed snack, head back down to the cabin and go below deck, and the air conditioning had shut off. And I look at the air conditioning control panel, it says there's a HPF, high pressure fault. So the AC's not working. I'm like, are you kidding me? Now, Friday night, there was a little bit of a lake breeze, but Saturday, you know, for 3rd of July last week was hot and humid. And so now it's 11 o'clock at night. I was just starting to settle in and get, you know, relaxed. And all of a sudden, stress level back up off the charts, opening owner's manuals, Googling how, and this is a brand new boat. How do you fix get the AC working? But we got to bed on Friday and it wasn't too bad because there was a cooler lake breeze. It was only like 70 down in the cabin. But I got up on Saturday knowing that Saturday was going to be a super hot day and Saturday night was going to be a super hot night. There was no way I was going to be able to sleep if it was that hot. So I'm on the phone with the dealership. I'm on, you know, I'm Googling, trying to figure out if I can get this AC working. No luck. So we had friends coming in Saturday to take a little cruise, anchor off of the Sheboygan beach and swim and have some drinks, and ended up stressing about that all day, knowing my AC is not working. How am I going to get to sleep tonight? It's going to be a miserable night. And it was like Saturday night when we tried to go to bed, it was like 82 degrees down in the cabin of the boat and stifling hot. There's not like big, huge windows in the boat where you can open it up and even get some airflow through there. So it was a miserable night of sleep. I ended up sleeping up in the cockpit on the floor where it was a little bit cooler. And then it was a miserable night of sleep. And so anyway, the ride back Sunday was gorgeous. I mean, you know, nice 70 degree out on Lake Michigan, virtually no waves, flying back from Sheboygan, really good time, really good cruise speed. And So that was the last couple of weeks. This weekend, I had my brother up from California and just took the family out on the yacht Saturday. So it was just a crazy stressful. Oh, and then to make matters worse, this past week, my tenants were moving out. I had new tenants moving in, tenants moving out, just left the house really dirty. You know, you're supposed to clean it and have it ready for the new tenants. So that was just, I had about 20 hours of cleaning and painting to do over at my rental property. And I don't have 20 spare hours in a week. So it was just, it was a week from hell. But it's over now, and we're back on the air. And so for those of you who tune in strictly to hear about gun stuff, sorry for the off-topic foray into my my goings-on the past couple weeks. But that was where it was at. We're back back at it here for Well Armed Radio, and hopefully we've got we'll be pretty steady for the next few weeks for the time being. Might have some more trips coming up, but I'll let you know those. So anyway, with all that said, July 11th, we're now into July. You know, one of the first topics I'm going to talk about tonight is that it gets so disappointing sometimes to be a Republican, because only Republicans would walk away from a proven winner. You know, Democrats don't do this. I don't want to be a Democrat. I can't stand the Democrat principles. But the Democrat Party leaves so many things to be envied. Democrats, they stick together. Democrats don't shoot friendly fire at each other. Democrats are all for one, one for all. They're all for the cause. They're committed. They're active. They're motivated. They're driven for their cause. Misguided as it is, you know, Democrats are very, they have, I'm not sure if I, what's that, how's that term go? Single-minded purpose, or they're very committed to their cause. They're very focused on their purpose. Republicans, on the other hand, we shoot friendly fire at each other. We hold each other to these crazy standards. We throw each other under the bus. But only Republicans would walk away from a proven winner. And who's the proven winner? Donald Trump is the proven winner. You know, I hear so many, we heard before, you know, Trump was not a proven winner in 2016. He won, but he was not a proven winner. So I can understand why in 2016 there was Republicans who couldn't support Trump, never Trumpers. You know, I never really got the never Trumpers, but the people that were less than enthusiastic about Trump, totally get it, totally understand. But Trump, let's just stick here in Wisconsin. Trump was the first Republican to win Wisconsin since Ronald Reagan. I mean, that was a long freaking time ago, 30 plus years, long time. Yet all the people that there's people here I can hear, and I can, Republicans in Wisconsin who seem to be looking for something other than Trump. You know, Trump derangement syndrome is where, just like Walker derangement syndrome that I talked about in this show several episodes ago, a caller to the Buck Sexton Clay Travis show who took over for Rush Limbaugh brought up something, and he said, you know, I'm a Trump supporter, voted for Trump. I'm really happy for what Trump did to the country, for the country. But I have Trump fatigue syndrome. This is what this Republican said. And I believe this guy was a genuine Republican, genuine, someone that voted for Trump. But he's like, I have Trump fatigue syndrome. I'm just looking for someone who's, you know, less controversial, doesn't, you know, essentially he wanted Trump's personality without, or excuse me, he wanted Trump's policies without Trump's personality, thinking that that would be some kind of like easy victory. And I just think to myself, again, only Republicans would walk away from a proven winner. Trump is a proven winner now. 2016, Trump was not a proven winner. Trump is a proven winner. He can win in purple states. He did win in purple states. He did what he said he was going to do. He did more than I think, and I was a Ted Cruz supporter. I think Trump got way, I mean, monumentally more done than Ted Cruz ever would have got done. I think Trump was genuinely turning the ship away from socialism. We won't say turn, I don't want to say he had it turned around, but he had the hands on the steering wheel of the ship of the USS United States of America, and he was turning that ship around versus other Republicans, George W. Bush, who simply pulled back on the throttles and had a ship, the USS United States of America, cruising towards socialism at a much lower rate of speed than the Democrats. George W. Bush did not make any fundamental change in this country. He did not reverse the the course that we were on to socialism. He just kind of pulled back the throttles a bit. I think Trump was turning the ship towards capitalism and freedom, and that's why the left hated him. That's why the visceral hate, because Trump was making structural changes that were going to be really, the Democrats knew were going to make it really hard for them to undo, just like Scott Walker did in his first term, at the beginning of his first term, made structural changes in Wisconsin that were going to be really hard for the Democrats to undo, really set back the Democrat agenda for a generation. And again, only Republicans would walk away from a proven winner like Trump. So you hear these people, and a lot of them are in the media, and they just, there's this sense that they are now appreciative of what Trump did, but they're looking for someone else. And who they're looking for, a lot of it, it's just, look, they did a straw poll at, I don't know if it was CPAC or something. There was a straw poll a short time ago, and I don't know if it was a Republican convention in Denver or something, but and DeSantis won it slightly. You know, these Republican, especially Republican party loyalists, it's just amazing to me that they would walk away from a proven winner like Trump. And they think that there's a better, more perfect candidate out there. Someone who would have Trump's policies, but not Trump's purported personality. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with Trump's personality. I don't. In fact, I think that while the talking heads, and even it's, I even get a sense that Buck Sexton and Clay Travis, who took over Rush Limbaugh's spot, that even they are a little lukewarm on Trump. I think when you're one of those elitist celebrity pundits, even as a Republican, even as a conservative, which I certainly consider Buck Sexton and Clay Travis conservatives, I think that there's a desire to have a more perfect, polished candidate for president that, see here, Lon said CPAC straw poll today was 98% for Trump. That's excellent to hear. I don't remember which straw poll it was from a few weeks back, but just DeSantis slightly edged out Trump. And I there might have been one that was in Florida, some convention in Florida, which of course is DeSantis' home territory, and no surprise that he would do very, very well there. But this notion that DeSantis is or could be Trump's policies without Trump's controversy, I think is specious, because if DeSantis was as much of a ball buster, I said this on last week's show, or I said last week, several weeks ago show, I said that if and when DeSantis would start making the structural changes that Trump did, the left would turn on DeSantis and we would get DeSantis derangement syndrome, just like we had Trump derangement syndrome, just like we have Walker derangement syndrome. See here, Lon on the chat says that they have Dan Bongino in place of Rush. Yeah, there's two. Rush Limbaugh was syndicated across multiple broadcast networks, and some of the networks, I don't forget if it was Premier Networks, but there was several different, they switched to Dan Bongino in Trump's spot. But like for us here in Milwaukee, like we've got now the Buck Sexton, Clay Travis show in place of Rush Limbaugh's slot. And they must have some association because like they use Trump's intro music, excuse me, Trump. They use Rush Limbaugh's intro music on their show. So yeah, but yeah, Lon, there are people, many stations in the country who were part of the Rush Limbaugh syndication who are now not part of there's a split. Some of it is Buck Sexton, Clay Travis, and some is Dan Bongino. How do you like Dan Bongino, Lon? I'm curious because I was thinking about just streaming one of the stations that has Dan Bongino in place of Rush. Buck Sexton, Clay Travis, just okay. I mean, they're okay. Doesn't totally blow my skirt up. But again, just okay. But I even sense that Buck Sexton and Clay Travis just, they tend to these Republican, the Republican political class, I think, doesn't see the full picture. And I think what the Republican political class doesn't recognize, and I call them even the conservative political class, because there's like the Republican insiders, that would be like your Mitt Romneys and your Karl Roves and your Dick Cheneys and your Lynn Cheneys. But the conservative political class, I mean, that I would throw people like Buck Sexton, Clay Travis. But the famous conservative political class, see, outside of Trump, I feel, and maybe Sean Hannity as well, I feel like the rest, they, Trump is like sand in their underwear. To be a talking head in the conservative elite political media class, having to deal with all of the vitriol and hate that the left spews at Trump. I think they think that if you had a more supposedly polished political person like DeSantis, that you could have all of Trump's success and all of Trump's policy benefit without the supposed controversy. Even Bill O'Reilly, who came on the Buck Sexton Clay Travis show this past week, said that he interviewed Trump recently. And he said to Trump, you know, Trump, you need to be more like Winston Churchill. And I think to myself, you know, again, you Republican talking heads, you Republican media figures, you keep thinking that Trump's controversial nature is a negative. Maybe because for you guys in the media who like feel like you have to defend Trump and, you know, in your snobby, elitist celebrity circles, it's a little bit of heartburn to have to support Trump, even though you generally do support his conservative policies. I think what the political class doesn't realize, these conservative talking heads, Republicans, what if Trump's controversy is the reason he won? What if Trump's controversy is what if the way the media hated on Trump is the reason that middle America loves Trump so much? If you get someone like Ron DeSantis, who initially might not have Trump's controversy. Now, again, I think that would come. If you trade in if you trade in Donald Trump for Ron DeSantis, now all of a sudden you're going to find out 2 months down the road, there's all this controversy circling around DeSantis because the media would manufacture that controversy, just like they did with Scott Walker. Walker derangement syndrome. Scott Walker, choir boy, Eagle Scout, never mean tweeted, doesn't say a bad word, very polished, very, very reserved, very, very regimented, very committed to the talking points, doesn't go off script. In Wisconsin, they turned Scott Walker into Hitler, portrayed him as the meanest, most despicable person ever, you know, hated unions, union busting, and just that's what the left will do to anybody that actually pushes structural change. And so Ron DeSantis, who I really like, I think Republicans are making a huge mistake to try to look for someone like DeSantis over Trump. Now, so on this one side, in the political class and these talking heads and even some callers to national shows like the Clay Travis Buck Sexton show, you hear a little bit of this angst towards Trump, a little bit of Trump fatigue syndrome, we'll call it. Trump fatigue syndrome is Trump supporters who are just kind of tired of the having to deal with the media controversy. I think that controversial nature of Trump is, it could very well be the reason that he won. You find someone less controversial and they probably won't appeal to middle America. Middle America wants a fighter. We're pissed off. We're sick of seeing what's going on in DC. We're sick of seeing the political class enrich itself. We're sick of seeing, we know what the swamp in DC has done and we're sick of it. And so we don't need someone to go there and be nice. We don't need someone to go there. We don't want someone to go there and be nice. We want someone to go there and kick some ass. On the good side, in spite of the fact that there's still this erosion of support for Trump around the edges, I remind myself that Trump conquered in the Republican primary before, back in 2016. He'll do it again. these people that are kind of like, I won't classify them like the never Trumpers, but these people who are now tiring of Donald Trump, that doesn't concern me a bit, because back in 2016, when you had a big, huge supposed push against Donald Trump from the Republicans, the never Trumpers, I thought that after, I was a Ted Cruz supporter, but I always kind of liked what Trump brought to the race. I thought that after Ted Cruz dropped out of the race, I thought that after everybody else dropped out of the race, the primary, and it was just Trump and Cruz, and of course, Kasich from Ohio always stuck around. But I thought once it was mano a mano, Trump and Cruz, everybody was going to coalesce behind Ted Cruz, and he was going to whoop Trump's ass, but he didn't. Trump, even after everybody except Kasich was out, kicked Cruz's ass. So Trump conquered the Republican primary before. Trump's going to do it again. That's it. I don't think anybody is stupid enough to primary Trump. If Trump wants to run in 2024, it's Trump's if he wants it. That said, I'm still Trump DeSantis, because Trump would be a lame duck president. It's a second term, but DeSantis wouldn't. So that would be 12 years of swamp busting. I think Trump could hit the ground running. Remember the first part of Trump's first term? He had a hard time getting his cabinet together and people he could trust and his advisors. I think Trump would be able to hit the ground running his second term, and DeSantis wouldn't be able to hit the ground running. I think Trump's got the knowledge and the loyalty and the support and the network to be able to staff an administration from day one and start kicking ass. DeSantis would be a great understudy, and then you could have 12 years again of swamp busting. But I talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show, how if DeSantis starts to emerge as a political figure, because DeSantis is being a real conservative ballbuster down in Florida, I suggested that if DeSantis starts to emerge as a political powerhouse, the left is going to start to hate on him and have DeSantis derangement syndrome. And sure enough, this was about a week or two ago. But then I see an article on Fox News, and it says the headline, DeSantis derangement syndrome hits media. Media and the Dems as 2024 approaches. And this is where DeSantis's press secretary says that the establishment media is set out to destroy DeSantis. And that's true, because DeSantis is now becoming a lightning rod for Democrats and liberals down in Florida. And he's just gearing up for DeSantis is up for re-election in 2022. But then there's speculation that DeSantis will run for president in 2024. And again, now we had Walker derangement syndrome, then we had Trump derangement syndrome, now we've got DeSantis derangement syndrome. As DeSantis starts to prove himself as a ball buster, the media is starting to go nasty on him, make stuff up, misleading reports, all kinds of stuff. So again, for people who thought that DeSantis was going to could be all of Trump's policies without you having to stomach the media hatred, I point to what's happening to DeSantis already. As he's emerging as a ball-busting conservative, the media is starting to lose their shit. DeSantis derangement syndrome. And so if you think that turning your back on Trump and supporting someone, hoping for someone other than Trump as a presidential nominee in 2024 is going to be a more easy ride to victory, not have to, Lon, thanks for tuning in. Appreciate you catching us live here. But anybody who's under the impression that there's going to be that with a DeSantis administration, they wouldn't have to feel bad about or stomach the angst toward your candidate, get ready for the fight, because they're going to portray DeSantis as just the demon that they portray Trump as, if he's as much of a ball buster. If they're not portraying him with that same vim and vigor and vitriol against DeSantis, it would mean that he's not really pushing and making structural change like Trump was. So I'm hearing a lot of conversation amongst Republican faithful, including the national talking heads who supported Trump, about wanting someone with Trump's policies but not Trump's personality. Again, did segments on the Well-Armed Radio. It's clear there's many who don't have the stomach for the fight that Trump brings out of the left, not realizing that Trump brings the fight out of middle America even more. And I contend anyone who makes actual structural change in government that challenges the power of the government is going to draw that same frothing at the mouth derangement from the left and motivate the left just the same. You know, if they, the media and liberals, can make Scott Walker, the choir boy, Eagle Scout, son of a preacher who says nothing mean about anyone, doesn't tweet edgy things, they can make him into a monster with Walker derangement syndrome. They can make anyone into a monster. And just to recap, Walker saw everything that Trump saw from the media and the left. It was just a smaller scale because it was Wisconsin, not national office. 100,000 angry union protesters flooding Madison. Yep, we had it. Angry people storming the Capitol building in Madison. Yep, we had that. Democrat lawmakers fleeing to Illinois. Yep, had that. Statewide grassroots recall leading to a recall election. Yep, we had that with Walker. Media condemnation. Yep, we had that. Saturation protesting. Heckling of Walker at Girl Scout events, State Fair ribbon cutting, anywhere Scott Walker went, saturation, protest, and heckling. Weaponization of government agencies, the Milwaukee DA, John Doe investigations, the John Doe 1, the John Doe 2. Attack and destruction of Walker's staff with pre-dawn raids on homes and gag orders, Club for Growth, Eric O'Keefe, Deb Jordahl, Kelly Reinfleisch, Darlene Wink, Bill Gardner. It's like a mirror image of what they did and are doing to Trump, only again, slightly smaller scale because it was just Wisconsin, not the presidency, and not a national issue per se. But Walker drew in hate from the national media and celebrities also. Actors and actresses tweeting about him as Hitler. Musicians refusing to let him campaign using their songs. If Walker, the choir boy Eagle Scout, son of a preacher, can be turned into a monster, the left will turn anyone into a monster. The media still knows Trump's the guy to beat. But if you think DeSantis is going to be Trump without the controversy, you need to look back at what the media did to Scott Walker and what they're starting to do the same to DeSantis. And Trump was a public figure for decades, and the media loved him. And Trump's not a controversial person. And he's not offensive. He had decades in the public spotlight. Trump had decades in the public spotlight, and he was none of those things, none of the controversy, none of the accusations. The only thing that changed was the media attitude towards him when he started making change in government. If you think DeSantis is going to be Trump without the controversy, I submit that you're mistaken, because if DeSantis really challenges government power like Trump did, he'll be hated on by the media just as much, and you'll realize that you abandoned Trump for a less controversial candidate, and yet here you are with a candidate buried in controversy by the media. And then you'll realize the damage you did in turning your back on Trump. You'll send a message to future ball-busting conservatives who think of running for office that when the media attack comes, conservative voters are going to turn and look for someone less controversial. Any Republican office holder who doesn't fire up the Democrats and the liberal media just as much as Trump did, it's only because they aren't making any substantive change to government power. And yes, it's true, Trump fires up the liberals, but he fires up the freedom-minded Americans who gave up on politics long ago even more. Liberals are always nasty and always snarky to Republicans. I mean, look at George Bush. But Bush was just a speed bump in the road to socialism. Bush slowed down the march to socialism for 8 years, but he didn't change the trajectory of this country, nor did he reduce the power hold of the federal government. He made no structural change in government. In fact, he grew it massively with the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Education, No Child Left Behind. That guy on the Rush Limbaugh show, even before Clay Travis and Buck Sexton took over, he said, you know, he appreciates everything Trump did, but he has the Trump fatigue syndrome, and said that Trump opened himself up to so much attack with his personality That's the kind of dangerous thinking that is the reason Republicans have never won. And that's my opinion based on observation. And when I say win, I mean Republicans usually lose elections, but even when they win elections, conservatism doesn't win because Republicans cave even after winning and then going along to get along. Too many Republicans just don't have the stomach for the fight, and they blame their own when the media goes bananas, and they always want the results like Trump got without the fight that it took to get them. So again, I think it's dangerous. I think that sentiment would snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And I say would because I don't think that sentiment's going to be the predominant one. Like I said before, Trump rolled through the Republican primary back in 2016. He'll do it again. And I don't even think Trump's supposedly controversial nature is a negative. I think it's a positive. Now, honestly, I never found the things that Trump said all that offensive, but I focus on what Trump actually says, not what the reaction or the media representation of what Trump says. It's a big difference. You know, if you listen to the media representation of what Trump says, yeah, they make it sound like he said something terrible. But in context from Trump's mouth, I mean, what was all this nasty stuff that people say Trump said? I never saw it. Okay, the grab him by the pussy comment, that's the only thing that sounded offensive. But that was in the context of a hot mic conversation caught between two guys. Again, as Trump paraphrased it, locker room talk. That's not shocking or offensive. But Trump's controversial nature, I think, is the reason he won states no Republican has won since Reagan. Trump reaches people who are sick and tired of feckless Republicans like Mitt Romney, who come off as nice and polished, but don't fight, and they can't win. And honestly, they're all just Democrat-like, go along to get along while the country hurtles towards socialism. You know, so many Republicans, they're happy with a token tax cut that lasts for a couple years before Democrats jack taxes up again. But the growth of government continues unimpeded. And again, at best was just slowed from like the 90 mile per hour sprint to socialism to a 45 mile per hour cruise to socialism. So the media hasn't gotten a full shot at DeSantis yet, and they're still focused on Trump, and they know Trump's still the guy to beat. But I don't think DeSantis can attract the Trump voters, the blue-collar, apathetic voters from flyover country who never voted for years because they realized it didn't matter. Republican politicians were just like Democrat light. And don't get me wrong, I enthusiastically supported John McCain and Mitt Romney because I think a slow drive to socialism is still better than full speed to socialism. But DeSantis is really appealing to the Republican faithful. He's not going to attract the rural. The same thing with these straw polls and these Republican conventions. Those are the still the party insider loyalists. That's not who Trump most appeals to. DeSantis isn't going to appeal to the rural blue collar Trump voters that delivered states like Wisconsin to Republican president for the first time in 30 plus years. DeSantis is not a national name. He doesn't have the Trump brand recognition on the national level. And for those who say, well, during a presidential campaign, he'll get that national name. I mean, I disagree. Trump had a national name before he ran for office. And that gave him a platform that DeSantis never had and a history DeSantis doesn't have. So again, I believe DeSantis needs to be Trump's understudy in D.C. at the federal level to get the support of Trump voters across the country. Republican faithful don't win presidential elections. The freedom-loving, apathetic voters in flyover country who gave up on politics prior to Trump, those are the ones. The freedom-loving, apathetic voters from flyover country who gave up on politics prior to Trump, those are the ones who will win elections if we stop the voter fraud. Trump DeSantis in 2024. And I'm not so worried to see the Republican faithful tire of Trump because I realized that the Republican faithful, you know, they didn't support Trump in 2016 and Trump rolled through that primary. And so if Trump wants it in 2024, it's going to be Trump's. And, you know, those disengaged, apathetic voters who gave up on politics years ago, who Trump attracted, they're very pro-freedom folks. And they're not politically engaged, but that's who Trump had the brand and the balls and the message to reach. you know, and the balls was the most important part. So, you know, and DeSantis isn't dumb enough to try to run in a primary against Trump. You know, if Trump feels too old or like he doesn't have the energy to run, then he'll probably endorse someone like DeSantis. But if Trump wants to run, it won't matter that some Republican faithful think you can have Trump's policies without Trump's personality. Noam out of South Dakota, she can't beat Trump in a primary, and she knows it. DeSantis couldn't beat Trump in a primary. DeSantis might be able to beat Trump in a straw poll from Republican loyalists at a Republican convention, but DeSantis isn't going to beat Trump in a primary, in a national Republican primary for president. No way. No one can beat Trump in a Republican primary. It's his if he wants it. So, you know, and again, and a Trump DeSantis ticket would give us 12 years of swamp busting and draining. And, you know, if Trump doesn't think DeSantis would hold strong after Trump's last term, he'll pick someone else as a running mate. But it's not going to be some pussy like Pence. Next thing I was going to mention here, you know, do you guys ever watch One America News? I watch Newsmax and One America News, but One America News, I mean, they're so fantastic. I feel like even Newsmax has now, they went soft. They stopped focusing on the election theft and the election fraud and just kind of moved on. One America News didn't. One America News, I just think they're fantastic. They call it Republicans, including Wisconsin Republicans who won't audit the vote. And they still talk about the vote fraud, which, and again, I admit that I've stopped watching as much Newsmax. Newsmax, you know, Newsmax turned around and issued some apology to the Dominion Voting Company, the Dominion Systems Company, because Dominion threatened to sue them. So there's just, but One America News is just fantastic. If you don't watch it, I would give it a watch. It's, you know, Newsmax is good. Fox News is just going down the shitter. Newsmax is good, but One America News is just fantastic. You see, this is past week. You know, Trump has sued Facebook and Twitter. Trump has sued big tech over their censorship. You know, here's the thing. I have zero faith in the court system. I'm so glad Trump filed this lawsuit. And good on him for trying. You know, when people say, you know, they're private companies, they can do what they want, here's what you have to think about. If all of the television news networks, NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, if they all decided that they weren't going to run commercials for Republicans anymore, would you say, they're private companies, they can do what they want? Now, this issue's already been litigated. That's why the FCC has the fair use or equal time doctrine. But if also these networks, NBC, CBS, they're granted their broadcast license from the FCC, the public airwaves, there's only so much. Now with digital, it's different, but with radio frequency, there's only so many radio frequencies you can broadcast on. That's why you can't have 1,000 AM radio stations all in the same market, because there's not enough broadcast frequencies to broadcast them all on. So the FCC has to create licenses, and then people give. That takes away this notion that private companies, private networks don't have to abide by constitutional principles, because the government is granting them their licenses, and because there's only a certain number of those licenses to go around. Ergo, just like the FCC requires that you have to give equal time to all candidates, if you're, you know, if a news outlet give a certain amount of time to a Republican candidate, they have to give equal time to a Democrat candidate if they want it. Obviously, it's usually the way around. If the network news gives a bunch of time to a Democrat candidate, they would have to give equal time to a Republican candidate. This is even the case for AM radio, WISN, News Talk 1130 here in Milwaukee. if they do an hour interview, like let's say there's a race for a state senator, and they U.S. senator, and they do an hour interview with a candidate for the U.S. in a general election, an hour interview with the candidate for the U.S. Senate. If the Republican candidate, if the Democrat candidate for U.S. Senate wanted to, they could demand equal time, and they would, the WISN would have to grant them an hour interview with the Democrat candidate. Of course, WISN would totally do it because there's nothing they would like more than to have an hour to ask these feckless, phony, principle-less, bumper sticker logic Democrats to get them for a sit-down interview. I mean, you could just school them. They don't do it because they don't ask for equal time because they only want to have their message out in the mainstream media where they have cushy softball reporters asking them cushy softball questions, not following up, not probing, not demanding real answers, and instead letting them sidestep and pivot and tiptoe around and play the political doublespeak game. So when you've got these virtual monopolies like Twitter, like Facebook, they're such a huge part of the public domain, there is precedent for them to have to respect freedom of speech, because either by being a monopoly or by the powers that government grants them through, what is it, that Section 230 or something. But again, if people think freedom of speech, that only applies to government, that's not true. Freedom of speech has always applied to some private entities like mass media because of their monopolization of the broadcast spectrum. If we allowed them to censor and refuse to, again, for example, have Republicans on, that'd be incredibly unfair and incredibly damaging for freedom. So Trump suing, if there's any conservatives out there who are like, oh, you know, I don't agree with what big tech's doing, but we need to use our power as consumers. No, it's more than that. It's more than that. What big tech is doing needs to be slapped down. Again, I've said through antitrust, you know, through the monopoly, our country has used antitrust law to get rid of monopolies in the past. But here's the other thing. When it comes to that, there is so much collusion. If you think that big tech is just by their own volition choosing to censor, for example, Donald Trump, you're nuts. When big tech is getting orders / requests and honoring them from Democrats, from elected Democrats, that is collusion with the government. The government is involved in squelching free speech. So this is definitely a free speech issue, even for those purists who think, oh, it's a private company. No, it's a free speech issue for two reasons. One, because of the precedents for all of these broadcast monopolies, mass media monopolies. But two, because big tech is colluding with, we've got that, there's emails to prove it. There's emails, there's correspondence to prove it. There's documentation to prove that big tech is in bed with liberal Democrats. And once you've got that kind of arrangement, that does bring in constitutional oversight from a principle and precedent standpoint. So a couple other things I was going to hit here before I let you guys go, before I close off this this show. You know, the left thinks that radical right-wing anti-government extremists are the greatest threat to our country. And that's not just lefty media propaganda. You got the Department of Homeland Security itself. They issued a report last year, I believe it was, citing anti-government extremism as the greatest threat to the United States. So let's deconstruct that for a second. And I don't think it is. If we just take at face value that anti-government extremism is the greatest threat to our country. I don't actually think anti-government extremism is the greatest threat to the country. Maybe it's the greatest threat to the political class. Maybe it's the greatest threat to the government. But there's a difference between our government and our country. In many ways, they're intertwined, but they are actually two different things. Our country is the people, the heritage. The government is the government. Radical right-wing anti-government extremists are not the greatest threat to our country. People who believe in freedom so much they're willing to fight for it are not the greatest threat to our country. They may be the greatest threat to the government, but not the country. So let's draw that distinction right there. But if we take it at face value that the Department of Homeland Security's report that says that, you know, that anti-government extremists are the greatest threat to our nation's security, let's deconstruct that. What drives anti-government extremism? Fosters anti-government sentiment? Well, tyrannical government does. I mean, think about it. If you had a government that left you alone for the most part, left you the freedom to live your life, there's no reason to hate it. There's actually a reason to embrace it. If government's just powers, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Governments exist to protect these rights. This is right out of the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. They're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And to protect these rights, governments are instituted among men by the consent of the governed. So if government was protecting our individual rights, nobody would be against it. There's no reason to be against something that is there protecting your freedom. The only thing that would drive anti-government extremism would be tyrannical government. Because if tyrannical government is not protecting your freedom but taking away your freedom, well, that's what fosters anti-government sentiment. Now, Kamala Harris loves to talk, and Democrats love to talk about root cause. They like to talk about root cause because it shifts the focus. They like to talk about the root cause of immigration, illegal immigration. Well, we don't want to come down on illegal immigrants. We want to address the root cause. Same thing with crime. They don't want to come down on the criminals. They want to address the root cause of crime. We can't be throwing urban youth in jail. We need to combat the root cause. When you shift the focus from the perpetrators of a crime, illegal immigration, violent crime in inner cities, and start talking about root cause, you're enabling. You're, by not holding people to account who are directly responsible and shifting the focus to some root cause, well, it's because, you know, it's because they, you know, grew up without opportunities. There's not enough jobs. Remember that when they said, well, if there was enough jobs, you wouldn't have crime in the inner city. Well, now there's plenty of jobs out there. Everybody's hiring, and yet crime is still spiking. So clearly that whole, if we got someone a job, they wouldn't be out committing crime. Yeah, that just doesn't hold water anymore, that Democrat talking point. But again, Democrats love to talk about root cause. The root cause of immigration, illegal immigration, the root cause of violent crime. But what's the root cause of anti-government sentiment? The root cause of anti-government sentiment doesn't just grow on trees. Anti-government sentiment doesn't just manifest itself organically. Anti-government sentiment is cultivated by a government who infringes on people's personal liberties. Who is creating tyrannical government? Well, that's an easy one. Liberal Democrats are. These Marxist, dictatorial, power-hungry liberal Democrat politicians, they're the ones that are creating a tyrannical government. So if anti-government extremism is the greatest threat to our country, which I don't know if that's true, but if it is, well, then the root cause of anti-government extremism is liberal Democrats and their Marxist policies. I mean, it's simple logic. If you truly wanted less anti-government extremism, stop being a tyrannical government, and less people will feel that anti-government sentiment. That's your root cause analysis for you, Kamala, liberal Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, you know, all these others who parrot that out. Root cause, root cause. Here's another told you so. Governor Cuomo in New York this past week made a major announcement on gun violence in New York. He declared that gun violence is a public health emergency. And because gun violence is a public health emergency, Governor Cuomo issues an executive order declaring gun violence in New York a disaster emergency. Governor outlines a comprehensive plan of 7 key areas, all with the aim of quelling the violent gun surge. The disaster emergency status will allow the state to address gun violence crisis by expediting money and resources to communities so they can begin targeting gun violence immediately. Look at all the things that Democrats have done in the last year by executive order, by dictate, under the guise of the dictatory powers that the COVID pandemic gave them justification to do. If we don't push back, and we said at the time, as me and many others predicted last March, the Democrats have been labeling gun violence as a public health crisis for years. Now, in the past, that was largely just to drive funding from government and to misappropriate blame and remove accountability from the perpetrators of violence to the political foes of Democrats. But after even 60% of Republicans rolled over like sheep and refused to push back against lockdowns, masks, fake science, Democrats in this past year realized the power of public health. Public health presents all the opportunities for total government control that global warming was supposed to. But global warming was too abstract and it was too distant to drive fear. But scare someone they're going to die next week from COVID? Hell, even half of Republicans fell in line like bald-headed characters in a 1984 Super Bowl commercial, Macintosh commercial. So, I mean, now conservatives are waking up. But in a post-constitutional America, with a stolen election and the loss of the consent of the governed, we're so far down the rabbit hole, the path out of this isn't clear. But again, here you've got Governor Cuomo. Here's what they're going to do with this. And again, in the past, we talked about this for years, this notion that gun violence is a public health, that was a phony notion that was just for two purposes, to drive money, drive funding. Oh, it's a public health crisis. We've got to study it. And to misappropriate blame. If it's a public health crisis, if it's a disease, it's not your fault. It's just a disease. We've got to treat it like a disease. Okay, that shifts the blame from the people who commit violent crime to these, again, for my previous segment, root causes of violent crime. But if under the guise of public health and the emergency orders that entailed last year, which would allow governors to shut down businesses, decide who could be open, who can't, where you can go, what you have to wear on your face. Well, then what about an emergency executive order to require to ban private party sales? What about an emergency executive order to require background checks on every single gun purchased. I mean, that's not a crazy conspiracy theory, wild-haired notion of what the liberal Democrats could do. In fact, I think it's exactly what liberal Democrats like Andrew Cuomo would do if they were and are successful. Maybe someone will challenge this in court, but declaring gun violence a public health emergency so that then you've got the executive order checkbook open, you can just start issuing dictates. That's where this is going. And that's not where this is going. That's where this is. It's where it is in New York. But you think Tony Evers wouldn't? I mean, look at how little pushback. When Tony Evers said that businesses had to require masks, who pushed back? No one. Many, many, many people said, yeah, that's unconstitutional. He can't do that. After the Wisconsin Supreme Court shut down and declared his business lockdown unconstitutional, that set the precedent that these mask mandates were unconstitutional as well. But everybody just went along with it because the news media said that news media said there's a mask requirement, and it was just, okay, everybody fell in line. So you think that if Tony Evers issues an executive order saying that a private party sale of a handgun is now illegal, you think that's going to draw the ire of and enough outrage to slap little Tony the Tiger, Governor Skeletor, back in his place? I don't think so. Now, guns are a little bit different. I mean, people tend to get really passionate about guns, but people just rolled over last year, and you know, the business lockdown they did push back against, but the mask mandates they didn't. Just went along with it. So yeah, that's where we are now. We're at the point where they've made the jump. They've seen the power of executive orders and dictatorial powers that the guise of public health justifies them, supposedly, they think, and provides them legal precedent to start acting like the dictators that they wish they were. So we're going to see more of that. It's really unfortunate. And, you know, we saw it coming. I mean, we knew that was coming when no one pushed back last year against so many of these unconstitutional mandates. We knew exactly what the long-term strategy of that was going to be. Long-term strategy was going to be, let's, under the guise of public health, there's no limit to what we can do. Every flu season, if the flu season starts getting out of control, well, public health, all of a sudden your departments of public health become the most powerful agency in government. But anyway, that's the show for this week. It's really late. It's like 11 o'clock on Sunday now, so I'm getting tired. My eyes are dry. I didn't bring a glass of water here with me to the broadcast microphone tonight. But thank you guys for tuning in. Lon and another gentleman here who screen name doesn't show his real name, but appreciate you tuning in. Anybody listening to the podcast, great to be back with you. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll probably do it again next week, hopefully a little earlier time. I'd love to try to get the show at least, yeah, by maybe like 9 o'clock. Start the show by 9. 8:30 is probably pushing it because I'll still be golfing, but you know, 9 o'clock get the show started so that I can be done by 10 and get my little precious beauty sleep princess butt ready for bed. All right, guys. You guys have a great week. Carry on. Be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?